Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you an apple and a plum and an apricot or two. Hey.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us. Today's guest is Anna LaPay, and she is an author and educator known for her work as an expert on food systems and as a sustainable food advocate. With her mother, Frances Moore LaPay, Anna co-founded the Cambridge-based Small Planet Institute, an international network for research and popular education about the root causes of hunger and poverty. Anna will be the keynote speaker at the Food Summit February 27th in the Kate Buchanan Room at Humboldt State University, where breakout sessions will include sustainable agriculture, aquaculture and fisheries, waste reduction, access to healthy, affordable, and culturally appropriate food, economic viability, and local food processing. So, Anna, growing up with Frances Moore LaPay, who was the author of The Revolutionary Diet for a Small Planet, I can't imagine what your dinner table talk was. Did you, did you guys just always talk about food and food systems?
Of course, it's so hard to know what life would have been like with a different mother. You only know the mother you have.
Uh-huh.
But in a lot of ways, I feel like my dinner time table talk and experience is probably what most people would imagine it would be. We definitely cook straight from the pages of Diet for Small Planet. And as a mom, she really brought my brother and me into her work. So we weren't sort of these kids who she didn't talk to about work stuff. You know, we really learned at an early age about the issues she was dealing with. And one of my earliest childhood memories was actually traveling with my mother and brother on a research trip she was taking to Guatemala. And I still can remember visiting farms with her and having my world view expanded by seeing what life was like in another country and understanding the implications of our U.S. foreign policy and our U.S. agricultural policy on countries, outside of our borders. So, yes, it was very much what one would imagine. She definitely talked to us about the issues she was grappling with every day in her work.
And when did you decide that you really wanted to go into this field as well?
Well, I was really interested, actually, as an undergraduate at Brown University. I was really interested in education and becoming a teacher and working in education policy. And I was always cared about the issues my mother worked on, but I didn't see that as my life's path. And that all changed for me when I was in graduate school. I was studying economic and political development, and I was kind of a frustrated grad student, really not inspired by what I was learning in the classroom. And my mother was kind of figuring out her next step, and I, as every good daughter should, had exactly the idea of what I thought she should do with her life, which was return to Diet for a Small Planet, do a 30th anniversary look at those insights she had as a young woman in her mid-20s about the root causes of hunger, and seek out places around the world that were really addressing those root causes of hunger, that were really building democracy at the grassroots, that were really building healthy and vibrant food communities. And so I encouraged her to write that book. She said yes, only if I would work on it with her, and I happily agreed. And initially I was her research assistant, and then eventually she promoted me to co-author, which I know getting promotions from your mother isn't so impressive, but it was my exposure to this entire, really the world. We traveled to India, Bangladesh, Poland, Brazil, Kenya, France, across the United States, looking for these communities, cities, places that were really creating sustainable food systems. And through that experience, I was both really inspired by the stories that we learned, but also I just felt this deep sense of responsibility as somebody living in the United States to come home and see what I could do as one person to try to influence and affect the policies and systems we have here. Because what I saw around the world was how much our choices, whether they're consumer choices or policy choices, are literally affecting the planet when it comes to food and health.
I think what some people think is, like, we've got it all figured out here. Let's export what we're doing here to other countries. And if we really look at our food systems here, we not only don't have it figured out, but we are doing some major things wrong. What things were those communities that were being successful? What did they have in common?
Well, one of the things they had in common was rejecting what we're doing here, which, rejecting what's become kind of this standard American diet, or as some of my colleagues like to call the SAD diet, the standard American diet, which, is heavy on sugar, heavy on processed foods, heavy on junk food and fast food. And what we saw were the communities that were the healthiest were the ones that were rejecting that, were saying, you know, we don't want to buy into that American idea of huge amounts of meat. And what we saw, really, those communities that were really successful were ones that were really returning to the diets that were indigenous to those places and really seeing how they could bring those back to life. When we got to India, for instance, the first place we went was New Delhi, and we were there to learn from Vandana Shiva, the Indian environmentalist and activist, learn from her network of farmers and advocates. And on the day we arrived, they were having a celebration to celebrate traditional Indian cooling drinks as really a counterpoint to the push of Pepsi and Coca-Cola into India. And it was amazing. In about an hour, we had maybe a dozen different tastes of everything from rhododendron drinks to barley and coconut drinks, all kinds of amazing, amazing drinks. And the idea was to remind the community there that there is this incredible tradition of hydrating, nutritious, cooling beverages that are much, of course, much healthier than drinking a bottle of Coca-Cola or Pepsi. So that was the first day we got there. We saw that celebration underway. We met Indians that were part of trying to protect and revive these traditional drinks. The next day, we're driving to this rural village hours outside of the city of New Delhi, and on this relatively small dirt road we're driving along, I see to the right of me an entire grove of eucalyptus trees that are painted with the Pepsi logo.
Aye, aye, aye.
And we meet villagers who tell us that in their village it was more easy for them to get access to a bottle of Pepsi than it was for them to get potable drinking water. So, you know, the contrast of what they're up against in terms of this real onslaught of Western style drinks and very unhealthy foods and really trying to protect and preserve and revive those traditional food ways was really striking in, you know, a 48-hour period.
It's really hard to get people to make changes around their food. And part of that is because there's so much culture involved in the food. And, you know, so many generations now of people being raised on processed foods in the United States. And so trying to get people to make change, how do you think is the best way to get people to go about doing that?
Well, I've actually been really heartened by how much change we are seeing. I mean, think about it. Just one company, Coca-Cola, spent $3.4 billion marketing last year. So that's with a B, $3.4 billion marketing. Essentially, their main product, which is sugar-sweetened beverages, mainly Coke, they spent that much money marketing. And yet, what we've seen in the past two decades is an incredible decline in soda consumption. I was just looking at the fact that it's the amount of soda Americans are drinking has dropped by 25% in the past two decades. So I think that's actually really encouraging, that despite the fact that you have this incredible push of marketing, that we are seeing that pattern change. We're also seeing food retailer industry analysts tell us that there is an incredible, incredible increase in demand for fresh, local fruits and vegetables that they're saying they've never seen before. And every industry analyst is saying this isn't a fad. This is really a shift in consumption patterns. So, yes, I mean, I'm certainly not here to tell you that we fix this. I'm certainly not here to try to deny the fact that there is still so much pain and suffering from diet-related illnesses today in this country. But I do feel like there's a tide that's turning. I do feel like what I'm hearing around the country is people really seeing the real damage that this diet, especially soda, has had on our bodies and our families, and are really starting to speak up and really starting to change. So yes, it isn't always easy, but I also feel like what I'm hearing from people in communities around the country is that this change is happening, and that, of course, what people see when they start doing something as, in a lot of ways, simple as cutting soda out of their daily lives is they really see a change fairly quickly, which makes that change actually easier. You get the rewards fairly quickly. So that's been really encouraging to me.
Well, it's great to hear you have a story of hope. I think that sometimes these topics can seem so big, but it's great to hear that you're very hopeful about what is happening and trending in the country. And if people would like to hear more from Anna LaPay in person, you should register for the Food Summit that will be taking place on February 27th at Humboldt State University. You can go to foodsummit2016.org to register and get more information. Thanks so much for joining us, Anna.
Well, thank you so much. I look forward to seeing people at the summit.
Grapes and the cakes, hey, come on to my house, come on.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. This program is also available on iTunes. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU for another edition of Food for Thought during the KHSU homepage.